Good afternoon. We're going to call the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Sports Facilities to order. I am the acting chair just for this particular meeting until Senator Bobby Joe Champion gets here. I am new to the commission, having just been appointed this year, so I don't have the background that some of you around the table have, but I'd like to begin by having those on the commission introduce themselves.
Thank you, Madam Chair. David Tomasoni, State Senator from Chisholm, and I am new to the commission also.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you. Representative Jim Davney, South Minneapolis.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Representative Joe Hoppe from Chaska, and I've been on, I think, since the commission was began, whatever.
Could you, Representative Hoppe, how long has that been, do you know?
Since 1974. All right, that's a lie. Since whenever the bill passed, either 2011 or 2012,
okay, gotcha.
This is part of the enacting legislation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Raymond Dean, representing downtown Minneapolis and the southern part of North Minneapolis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative John Applebaum, representing District 44B, which includes parts of Minnetonka, Plymouth, and Woodland. First time on the commission and excited to be here.
And I did not say, Senator Terry Bonifay, I represent District 44, which is Minnetonka, Plymouth, and the city of Woodland. So the other interesting thing to note about the commission is that it is currently being chaired by two Senate members, Senator Bobby Joe Champion and I believe Senator Julie Rosen. And so there will be a time soon when we will take a vote to change the gavels and alternate who is chairing this commission, but we do not have the membership at today's hearing to be able to do that, and so we will post that as soon as we know when the next meeting will be so that we can accomplish that. So the first thing on our agenda is the approval of meeting minutes from January 23rd, 2014 and September 10th, 2014, and so those should be in your packets.
Madam Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Is there any discussion on the minutes? Was there anyone else present today who was at that meeting to affirm or ask questions about the minutes? Jim Davney was excused, right? Yeah. Well, Representative Hoppe, we are entrusting you with with the ability to make that determination. So Representative Hoppe moves to approve the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. The minutes are approved. Next on our agenda is Ms. Kelm-Helgen, our Executive Director of the Sports Authority. So nice to see you.
Yes, it's great to be here. Thank you. So just to check, I wanted to make sure I knew kind of what our timing was here. What are we thinking as far as it's one of those presentations that could be really short or could go a little bit. So,
Ms. Kelm-Helgen.
Call me Michelle.
It's okay, totally thank fine. You. I have it on my calendar from 12 to 2. I don't know what other members are assuming.
Okay, I won't go till 2. So
okay, good.
We're good. Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. All right, I just wanted to get a little bit of a sense. So I'm going to walk you through this presentation. I think everybody's clearly has the basics, but as there are a number of new members, I just always remind people in terms of our project team, the way your legislation was set up, every dollar that's spent in the stadium must be approved by both the Stadium Facilities Authority, representing the government, the state, and the city, and the Minnesota Vikings, who obviously have put in half the money. And now, as we'll talk a little bit in a few minutes, they actually have exceeded by quite a bit the 50% that they originally put in.
So just for the record, with regard to that 50 percent. In that, are you including the seat license revenue?
Yes.
Yeah, so just for the record, one might not all accept that that would be the Wilfs have that the team has put that in, because the public puts that money forward in the term of stadium licenses.
Right.
Go ahead. Thank you.
The architect for the stadium is HKS, as I think everyone is aware. They built both the Dallas Cowboys Stadium as well as the Indianapolis Colts Stadium. And, of course, our construction manager and probably our most important partner is Mortensen Thor. And as I think we'll talk in a little bit, having a Minnesota construction manager with all of the local businesses that they've brought along as part of that, I think has probably been the best decision we could have made on this project. So that's been huge. In addition, probably since the last time we met, something new to the whole picture is we've hired an outside third-party operator, namely SMG Corporation, which is a professional facilities, sales and marketing and management group. And we can talk, if anyone's interested in the terms of that agreement, we negotiated an agreement that I think is very favorable to the state and is going to bring in some ongoing revenue to the stadium, as well as basically passing the liability on the expense side off to this company. So I think that's going to be a big benefit to us as we move on. Obviously, this is a view of the building. We've talked about this at length in terms of, you know, some of the significant features that have guaranteed that this building will be different than what the Metrodome was. And probably the most significant feature that we look at is this transparent roof that is essentially, it's an ETFE material, which is like a hard polymer plastic. It's supported by a steel roof structure, but essentially it becomes transparent. So when you sit in the stadium, you can see sun, you can see clouds, you can see snow, rain, whatever, and it's kind of Minnesota's version, along with the operable doors that we'll talk about in a minute, of a retractable roof. So instead of having a roof open, we have some other features that are going to give you that indoor-outdoor feel. The original investment that was put in and planned for by the legislature and the governor when the legislation went into effect had our building at $975 million, so just under $1 billion. The Vikings were putting in a contribution, and again, you're right, the $100 million of stadium seat licenses is part of that $477. But the Vikings, kind of in their column, had $477 million in revenue. The state capped their contribution at $348 million, so roughly $350. And the city had a contribution of $150 million. And it was very clear that there would be no more money from the state or the city as part of this.
So, Ms. Kilmhagen, if we could. So if anybody has questions as we go, please do ask. So did you have a question from somebody?
Yeah. Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Kilmhagen.
You can call me Michelle.
Okay, Michelle. So the third-party operator, SMG, and since I'm new to the commission, I don't really know what are some of the regulations. I'm assuming they would have to follow all of the City of Minneapolis employment regulations. I know they're having discussions today in City Hall regarding change to some of those. So my assumption is they would have to follow those regulations as well. There's nothing that exempts them.
No. Any regulations that would be put in place would have to be followed by our third-party operator. That's true.
And then, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Kilmhagen, my ears perked up when you mentioned the firm line from the state and the city on no more of the expenses go to the public entities. I'm wondering if this is the right time to ask for an update on the change orders and the conflict between the authority and Mortensen as to who is going to be responsible for those, because clearly, as you stated, there's a firm line that the state and the city are not going to be contributing any further
right.
to this project. And I'm just wondering if you could update us either now or at a later point in your presentation.
Sure. No, I'm glad to answer questions now about that. No problem.
Thank you.
Yes. So essentially the way we've been operating the project, we've been very clear that we've got a hard cap on our money. So we put together a contract with Mortenson, which basically had them come in and give us what's called a guaranteed maximum price. So we really shifted our liability for any cost overruns to Mortenson Construction, by and large. Now, essentially what is, so the way we've been operating it is that, you know, as these additional, as you can imagine under any construction project, you have the original design, it's priced, and then you start to build. The way our contract is written with this guaranteed maximum price, Mortenson actually has a design completion responsibility. So as things evolve and the design evolves, when there are additional costs, gee, this door needs to move from this wall to that wall because it doesn't work another way, there now has come up with questions as to what's a design completion responsibility and what's a change order. And so that's kind of what we are disputing, if you will. Right now there are, and so essentially we've been talking about this. We've been trying to find a common understanding on this, and we really haven't been able to do so. And the way our contract was set up, it was very clear that our dispute resolution process would be when we couldn't reach agreement, we would bring in an outside mediator to essentially help us, you know, figure this out. And I think what outside mediation will do is not only help us define who pays what in the current dispute, but give us a framework to answer these questions for the last year of construction as we move forward. So essentially, what we are talking about is currently there's $15 million in disputed costs, which again is way less than 2% of our overall project budget. We currently have in our contingency $29.5 million. We've got almost $30 million in the owner's contingency. So we've been asked, well, if you have the money to cover these costs, why are you going to mediation about it? So I want to be clear, we don't have cost overruns. Whatever a mediator would decide, the authority needs to pay this and Mortenson needs to pay that, you know, even if it all would end up in our column, and we certainly don't, I don't think Mortenson would expect that it would all end up in our column. But we have money to handle that. So we do not have cost overruns. I just want to be clear about that. On the other hand, we also think that per our contract, these are dollars that we don't think we owe. And as good stewards of the public money, we don't want to spend money that we don't think contractually we owe. So that's really why we want to get, you know, someone else to look at it and say, okay, as we look at it, as we define it, this is probably a framework that could be used. So these costs should be borne by the authority. These kind of costs should be borne by Mortenson. If you talk to Mortenson, they obviously have their view, and we obviously have our view. So we are going to mediation. The mediation actually is scheduled for November 9th, 10th, and 11th. There'll be a three-day mediation process that we will use. And we are I'm looking forward to it. I think in a lot of ways so is Mortenson. I think this will give us a framework to move forward with that we can use not only to solve this current dispute, but to solve any issues that could come up in the future. Does that answer your question?
Michelle, when you use the term Mortenson and us, what's missing for me is the Vikings. So where does the Sports Authority, where's that line in terms of how does that financial burden get shared between the team and you representing the state's interests.
Mm-hmm. Well, the state is the developer, and we do hold the contract with Mortenson, and we will, of course, be the owner and operator of the stadium. However, the team has been our partner. They need to make decisions on all these things as we move forward. They have actually given us, like, a portion of our money that has come into our contingency. We have actually $8 million that came from the Vikings that's part of our contingency that actually is identified specifically as a claims fund within that contingency. And that was money that actually came from the Vikings. So as we've been doing this, you know, because really as we face cost issues, we always have choices. We can, if we have additional costs that have to be covered, the way we've been managing this is, okay, there's no more money from the state. So the first thing we obviously try to do is reduce the costs. The second thing, though, that we try to do is if we do think there are costs that we would have to bear is we look then if to make cuts to the project. And so, of course, from the Vikings' perspective, you know, there's a lot of things in the stadium that they really care about, whereas from our perspective, we care about those things too. But, you know, in the end, we have to manage this budget and stay within our means, so to speak. So the Vikings along the way have been very good partners from the standpoint that they have come in and put in additional monies, and it's been really helpful to resolve some of the disputes before they ever get to be disputes, to add some things to the stadium that we've had to add, some of them as mundane as floor drains in the field, as well as the money they've added to take care of some additional amenities they want.
Representative Dabney, follow-up, and then Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Kelmehelgen, you used I'm just trying to understand this contingency fund a little bit more. You referenced $8 million from the team, but then referred to it as claims money. And I don't have a clear definition of claims in my mind, but I think of it as money set aside in case of liabilities incurred, not in case of design flaws, which is what you've talked about as the portion for or the rationale for some of the changes, moving a door because it was the design didn't allow it to operate there, having to add new floor drains because there was not adequate drainage plan for. Those aren't liabilities. Those are design flaws. Liabilities are accidents on the site or things like that. So I'm a little concerned that we've got $8 million that's set aside for liabilities that's now being considered as available for design flaws or other changes. And I'm wondering if you can just pull that apart for me a little bit more, please.
Michelle.
Okay. And I want to be clear, I'm not an attorney, and I can't, you know, again, I don't want to get too far out front explaining all these things because I am obviously on the record and we have press here, and I don't want to get too detailed in my explanation because there could be definitions and things that I'm not necessarily understanding. But what I will tell you is the $15 million in dispute that we are going to mediation on is considered to be claims. So in the end, these disputed amounts or claims are going to be decided by a mediator where they designate this is what you owe and this is what you owe between the project. And again, the project does include it's the authority and also the team. And, of course, our project money has all the team's money into it as well. So a portion of it will be paid. But all I'm saying is the Vikings did step up and add $8 million to our contingency, if you will, so that we have some flexibility as we go to mediation and as we decide what it is we would owe, what it is Mortenson would owe. It gave us a cushion in our fund. So to that extent, to the question that was raised, how has the team stepped up to help on this matter and what is their responsibility, I essentially use that as indicative of our what we've gotten from them into the whole mix that eventually will be used to settle these disputed items.
Thank you, Ms. Kelmelgan.
Thanks. And I, and again, how things are defined, I'm a little out of my league on that and would hate to say much.
Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Kelmelgan, thank you for being here. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to talk to you about this. I'm even wearing a Vikings tie. I'm a lifelong fan, and I'm really looking forward to the new stadium being built. But I do have a couple of questions. You know, I'm new to the legislature, so I'm new to this commission, and pardon me if maybe I'm not understanding a couple things. But my understanding is that this stadium was sold to the public as the People's Stadium. And as this chart outlines, $348 million was the maximum investment on part of the state, and it was sold through the Vikings and other, you know, individuals and organizations that, in order to fund the $348 million, it would principally be through gambling. So the e-pull tabs and charitable gambling and other sources, well, it's no secret that those funds have woefully underperformed in how much revenue they've brought in. So my question is, what happens to that deficiency? How is the state expected to pay its share when the revenue streams initially thought to supply the money haven't produced?
Michelle.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I want to be a little careful on about how I speak on behalf of the state, because it's actually the legislature and the governor that have looked at the legislation, how these bonds are being paid, and made decisions as to how, what changes would be made to make sure there were sufficient funds to pay off the bonds. But as I understand it, a couple years ago when they realized that the electronic pull tabs were not going to produce the kind of revenue that was expected, and pull tabs in general wouldn't grow enough, they definitely have grown and they definitely are contributing to the bond payments, but they haven't grown as much as they were projecting. As I understand it, there was legislation that essentially closed a corporate loophole and provided a separate ongoing stream of money that is being used to pay off the bonds. But again, I would have to defer anything more than that very general explanation to state MMB or Department of Revenue to talk about how that whole system comes together. But I do know there was a change in legislation providing a separate source of revenue to make up the difference.
Okay, I have a follow-up if that's...
Representative Applebaum.
That's fine. So you mentioned there's a $29.5 million contingency fund of which the Vikings have contributed $8 million towards. In the future, and, you know, things, stadiums get built, there's overages, there's, you know, design changes, change orders, et cetera. In the event that there are additional expenses, I mean, you mentioned before that there's a guaranteed maximum price in place with Mortensen, which I fully understand. But I suppose I'm just asking you for assurance on the record that under no circumstances should the state of Minnesota be responsible for one extra cent of any costs above and beyond what was already agreed to.
Well, yes, I can assure you, unless the legislature appropriates more money, there will not be any additional money from the state or the city. That is the premise we've been operating on for 3 years. I think Mortensen, HKS, our architect, the Vikings, everyone knows that. The only other thing I want to just point out, while the Vikings put in to our contingency this additional $8 million, I think if they were here, they would make the point that the overall project is a combination of the money that the Vikings put in and the state and city put in. So our overall contingency also does include some of their money, as you can expect. Okay.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Applebaum, to your point, that's music to my ears to talk about how we're funding this. I still think, well, I know that if we change the tax structure for the charities, we give them a little bit more of an incentive to use e-poll tabs. We're going to bring in the money, and that's the way it was originally set up. It was originally a gambling bill that we put a stadium on. And we could have done this, and we still, if we do it this session, we could still change the tax rate, help out the Lions clubs and the Legions and, you know, youth baseball and little kid hockey. We could still help all them with a minor tweak to their tax structure, give them some incentive to use these things, and the money will flow in. I had no question. I just thought I'd throw that out.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe. Last question, Michelle, before we let you move on.
Yes.
See, we might be here till 2. With regard to the 477, because so many of us are new, could you describe to us the team debt PSL's League G4? Because I know, for example, that the team puts in some, and then there's some that's coming from the NFL itself that's in the form of a loan that gets paid back. But if you could remind us what those numbers are and which is which, and thank you for saying the personal seat license part was $100 million of the $477.
Yes. Again, I'm going to do this from memory, so don't hold me to the exact numbers, if you will. But as I think I remember, there's from the NFL, there are two pieces. One is a loan, and one is essentially a grant from the NFL that goes in. The combination of those two, I believe, is $150 million. Is there anybody from the Vikings?
Anybody from the Vikings can nod?
No. But I believe one is a grant, one is a loan, and I think it combined, it's $150 million. There's $100 million from seat licenses, so that brings you up to about $250. Now, the one thing I want to say is, the team has put in an additional $99 million, so $100 million in additional money has already come from the team. So their contribution is currently up to, so it's 477 plus 99, so call it 576. And to be honest, I don't think it's done yet. I know I still have other plans for things that we need them to do, perhaps. So it will go up a little bit more than that. So they're at about 577. If you take the 250, I mean, first of all, I just want to say, the NFL, if we didn't have this football component to the stadium, obviously would never give the authority money if we didn't have an NFL team. So I do look at it while they can access that 150, and some people say, well, that's not really a Viking contribution, that's the NFL contribution, but it's only there for the Vikings because the NFL does this with their teams. But even if you take that, so $100 million from the seat licenses, $150 from the NFL, you still have about $350, if you will, that comes from some sort of team, you know, Viking family, whatever contribution.
Thank you.
But again, please don't hold me to those
numbers.
Yeah,
we got the range. Thank you. I do appreciate that. And so before I turn the gavel over to my friend, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, I want to give Senator Miller a chance to introduce himself because we all went around and introduced ourselves, then you came and had a chance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize I was late. I drove up from Winona today and I had to get my 8-mile run in before I came. So Jeremy Miller from Senate District 28. I represent Winona, Houston, and Fillmore counties, and I've been on the commission since the beginning. So thank you.
Very good.
I should have known better. You love to do your introductions. So.
Thank you. And the other thing I would say is I think it would be helpful in the future is to have somebody from the Vikings at these hearings, because there are bound to be questions, and so rather than put you in that position to have to do that, I would ask for if you could ask somebody from the team to join us for these commission meetings if possible.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yep.
And so, for example, like MMB, if there was somebody from MMB here, that would have been helpful to come and answer the question of Representative Applebaum. So you know, when I hold the gavel, I get to make those requests. Now I'm going to give it to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you so very much to Senator Bonoff for covering for me. I was stuck in court, and they said a five-minute hearing ended up being until now because we were pushed back. So thank you, Senator Bonoff, for being the capable one that you are. And I know in times past that we've had Lester Bagley and others here from the Vikings, and definitely we will honor that request in order to make sure that our hands are on deck in order to answer any questions that the committee has. Any other questions from anyone around the table?
Well, and just for the record, I've asked our project coordinator to call or text the Vikings to clarify that number, because I don't, since we went through and I listed numbers from memory, I want to make sure we get the number right. So we'll have that for you. I am sure on the seat license number being 100, but I'm not 100% sure on the NFL number.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bono.
Mr. Chair, I just want you to know as background, what we've covered is that Ms. Kelm-Helgen got through her first slide, and then we've had many, many questions, including the current dispute with regard to the overages, as well as Representative Applebaum asked about how the shortfall is being made up, given the pull tabs didn't come through, and those kinds of questions. I had questions about the makeup of the Vikings contribution. So,
Mr. Chairman.
Great.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Senator Bonoff and Michelle, there's a pretty good Star Tribune article, Vikings tap many sources for stadium funds. If you want me to get it to you, I can send it to you, or you can just look it up on your phone.
How much was the NFL contribution?
It's not that clear, actually, but it looks like it's anywhere between $100 million and $150 million.
Well, I think, okay, so Tiffany's looking at that.
Yeah,
but
the
we'll
team declined to discuss this in detail. But the team's deal with the NFL includes just a straightforward $50 million loan that has to be paid back. A more interesting piece is another loan that does look like a subsidy from the league's other team owners, but because it's $100 million that gets paid back from what's called incremental visiting team share of gate receipts here in Minnesota. So
that I was that Ms. is Kelm-Helgen. Correct. So the $50 million of it is a loan. $50 million of it is a grant. $100 million is a loan. So they pay that back. Anyway, thank you.
And
that was helpful.
And I think the point is just that if we have Lester or someone here, we can make sure that we verify that, because I know how information isn't always correct that's in the paper. So let me just say.
Yeah, and I have my assistant calling the team to clarify that since we're in a public meeting. Okay.
Any other questions before we allow Chair Kelm-Helgen to continue if there's nothing else?
Okay. So here is the additional. So as you look at where we're at, we started at 975. The city and state has stayed the same on their contribution. The Vikings have increased their contribution by $99 million. Aramark, who is our concessionaire, came in with, as part of their, you know, as we do all these bids, as part of their bid when they came in, they agreed to put $10 million into the stadium for additional equipment and that kind of thing. And SMG, our third-party operator, came in with an agreement to put in an additional $2 million. So we now are up to basically $1.8 billion. $1.8 billion. So that's the total amount. Oh. Actually, so here we go. Per Lester Bagley, it was... the G3 finance package included a $150 million loan and a $50 million grant. So it actually was $200 million total, not $150. Okay. So whoever said the paper's not always right, that's true. Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Representative Applebaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you ask Mr. Bagley, as long as you're speaking with him, any interest on this loan from the NFL, or is it a interest-free loan, as has been reported?
Okay. I think all these things get difficult to translate. So I guess I'm feeling a little bit in the middle, like monkey in the middle here as I translate back and forth. I was just trying to check my figures. But maybe you could have him come to the next meeting and you could ask that.
That would be helpful. I'm not trying to make...
Applebaum.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not trying to stump you or anything like that. I just was very curious if some of the things that I've been reading, that this loan is indeed 0% interest is accurate, because that, you know, is something that I think the public should know and is important for the purposes of this hearing.
So I will say that we will invite Lester Bagley for the next meeting. And as I mentioned earlier, we usually have some representative from the Vikings here, and we'll make sure that happens in order to make sure all your questions are answered.
Thank you.
Chair, Senator Tomasoni.
So, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, they said something about $200 million in here from the NFL, okay, but I didn't get that far into the article.
That's
Chair Kim Helgen, you want to continue?
Okay. So, as I mentioned, in the design of the building is being done to really give us sort of our Minnesota version of a climate-controlled yet open stadium. So the roof, along with these doors, and there are five doors that open on a hydraulic pivot system that are essentially at 95 feet tall, so almost 100 feet tall, and they are 50 feet wide. So when those five doors are open, it'll be almost 300 feet of open space to really give you that feeling of being outdoors. They're also, I always make note of the fact that obviously these big doors will not be open in the winter, and, you know, should weather be bad. And there are about, within each of these five big doors, there are, I believe, eight personal doors, smaller doors on the bottom that open. So on, for bad weather, there obviously are smaller doors with, you know, wind curtains and that kind of thing to let people in and out of the building. One of the things I point out on this photograph is that's been added by the Vikings is a outside exterior LED board. So there's going to be a big video board that can run. So I always think about high school football championships. Whoever the schools are that are in the championships and are going to be playing in the stadium, you can have footage running from, you know, high school past games and that kind of thing. So that's a great feature that we have available to us. This shows you then, you can see the prow. I'm not sure if my... So you can see here the at the top of the peak... This is the prow of the building as it's being constructed, and that's where that LED board will come. You can also see the outline on the lower level of those five doors that are being constructed. And there actually right now are two doors that are hung already. If you go by the site, you can see the steel structure for those doors down there. The one thing that the city of Minneapolis had a committee that was put together that included businesses and residents and architects from the area. And the one thing they really wanted from a design standpoint, they did not want to have a back of the building. You know, the old Metrodome was kind of an ugly building. It sort of sat on the site as if a big spaceship had landed. It was very difficult to walk to. You couldn't see in. You couldn't see out. So one of the things we've done, we've gotten rid of that big parking lot that used to sit in the back of the building. We now essentially have four front doors. And this is just to give you a view from across the street. That parking lot is not part of the stadium site. It's actually on a building across the street. But as you look across, this is essentially the freeway side of the building, which used to be like the old back door. And now you have beautifully landscaped area with a very open, again, inviting approach to the building. This is the 6th Street side of the building. So as you come down 6th Street, the south gate, And again, just pointing out, there really are four front doors to this building. And everything is accessible by sidewalks, bike trails, walking paths, and it's very connected to the neighborhood rather than isolated the way the old Metrodome had been. This is a view of the park. You can see it in its finished form here. But I always point out to people, one of the big needs for the stadium is for this green space, for this infrastructure that we're going to need for all these, number one, big events. But even on a week-to-week basis, whether we're doing concerts or it's a Viking game, we need this outdoor space. A lot of other stadiums that we compete with, you know, that's why they sit out in these suburban areas, surrounded by these large parking lots where people can come and you can set up the infrastructure for all these big events. So we had originally planned on a park infrastructure space that was identified in your legislation that ran north and south. And if you can see, my pointer isn't working, but as you can see here, the block right in front of the stadium is essentially... Tiffany, I'm going to ask you to use this pointer on there. So you see this block where our light rail station runs through. The authority bought that block, and we now own that plaza space. And essentially what that is doing is that gives you the lead-in to this park space that the city, that we worked on a partnership with the city. So essentially we own one block. The city has a block and two-thirds that they own, if you will. But I think the really unique public-private partnership that brought this all together was that block and two-thirds, 100% is being paid for by the revenues from our parking ramps at the Stadium Authority. So essentially what we did, this all happened because Wells Fargo came to then Mayor Ryback and said, you know, we're looking at a campus out in a suburban area. Actually, they were looking at even a number of different states. And as the city tried to get them to think about this downtown area, and as Wells Fargo was interested in trying to locate around the stadium, their primary concern was they didn't want to have to pay to build a parking ramp because that obviously adds millions of dollars of additional cost. So we had this parking ramp that was going to have to be built anyway. We also own 450 stalls underneath that light rail station plaza. There's an underground parking ramp. So we had 2,000 stalls that we were going to have. Those stalls really were money losers for us on an operating basis because we would only use them on evenings and weekends. Now all of a sudden they have become these unbelievable cash generators because Wells Fargo came in, is building these two office towers on this site. They're going to have 5,000 employees down here. Their employees will pay us for parking. They're not getting parking for free. They'll pay for parking all week long. That, along then with our evening and weekend parking, has made these lots cash cows, if you will. And the money from these parking ramps are what is being used to pay off for 30 years the bonds on this park space. So when people say, I mean, this is a really unique public-private partnership because essentially you see here these two office towers. Just these two office towers represent $400 million in development by Wells Fargo. In addition, Ryan Development is building housing. You can see it on the back of the park as well as in front of those two office towers. That represents another $100 million in development. I'll talk in a minute about other development that brings us up to $1 billion already happening in this area. But this public-private partnership has given us a number of things. Number one, through those Wells Fargo towers now, we've got the Skyway connection to the stadium. It'll come from the, for those of you familiar, from the Jerry Half ramp. into the Wells Fargo towers, into our parking ramp, which you can see there on the corner, and then directly into the stadium. This is a big benefit as we try to attract all those Super Bowl, Final Four, all these big economic driver events to have a climate-controlled entrance into the stadium. It's also a big deal not only for Viking games, but whether you're playing high school baseball or going to a concert. You can park anywhere in downtown, get without ever going outside, get through the Skyway to the stadium. But this park plaza space that now gives us that infrastructure provides, I think, a great image, a great a representation of a really unique public-private partnership between Wells Fargo, Ryan Development, the City of Minneapolis, as well as the Stadium Authority and the Vikings.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Michelle, you were just talking about the buildings that are being developed, the Wells Fargo buildings, and that reminded me I had a few constituents that asked me about the U.S. Bank Stadium, which had to be interesting with Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank right there. But I noticed that it already says U.S. Bank on the side of the stadium. Mm-hmm. How do naming rights things work in terms of when they get to when it starts? Do they get to put the sign on right away? Did they get to put the name on the building early? Is this a dispute between two large banks that we don't want to get in the middle of? What's any light you can shed would be appreciated.
Sure. Chair Kim Helder.
The naming rights, Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, the naming rights in the legislation were designated as going to the team. So I think, as we all know, that that agreement was negotiated and done by the Vikings. I think it's great that it's a Minnesota company. As far as when the name, we obviously, as we finish pieces of the building, we put the name of the building up. We definitely are using the name U.S. Bank Stadium. That's kind of, you know, part of the agreement. So it is now known officially as U.S. Bank Stadium. And that's kind of where we're at. And it hasn't been a dispute between Wells Fargo or...
Follow Representative Hoppe.
Thank you. And no, I was joking about the banks. But, I was just curious, not that I don't care, but I understood the money was that was part of the Vikings money, and I just had people wondering. I guess they were thinking the name wouldn't be on it until the building was finished. I don't know. I just had a couple of people ask me, and hearing this discussion prompted me to remember to ask you.
I mean, we just always that's part of the exterior finishes on our building, so we just always have planned to have the name up there when the time came.
Representative Applebaum.
So is the state and city also prohibited from selling any naming rights for the park? I mean, I understand the U.S. Bank Stadium, those naming rights go to the Vikings. But for the park, doesn't it seem that the state or city should be able to make some revenue off of its naming rights given the state and city's significant contributions to the park and, you know, overall location and taking up such a big place, big space in the city?
Chair Kim Helga.
Well, again, I really don't like being in a position where I'm speaking for the Vikings, so I'm always careful how I parse everything. But the original legislation that was put in place gave the Vikings the right to naming rights on the stadium and the infrastructure around it, I think was the term. But again, I'm only pulling this from memory. The original Park Plaza design that ran north-south would have been, there was actually a red line that defined our plaza park infrastructure area. And that would have theoretically been part of what the Vikings could do naming rights for. So when we started having this discussion about this public park, obviously the Vikings couldn't sell naming rights to that. But the Vikings also weren't necessarily wanting the city to sell naming rights for that. So part of the negotiations that took place that we were all part of essentially had the city getting money so that it wouldn't be, I mean, there's definitely going to be acknowledgments of any funders of the park in the park. But rather than naming rights, essentially what revenues were committed to the city were these. Number one, and the Vikings would make the point, half the money that's going into the stadium, so that built the parking ramp and that this whole project is providing, half the money was theirs. So our parking revenues on an ongoing basis that come from our project pay off the bonds, the total cost of the bonds for the park. So that's a significant contribution. In addition, we negotiated with the city. They would have air rights, if you will, to sell to a developer on our parking ramp, either above it or actually, I think the way Ryan is envisioning it, it will be a building that is built in front of it. And the money that comes from those air rights, which is projected to be, I don't know, $3 to $5 million, I don't know what ultimately they will negotiate, will go to the city, and that air rights money was always anticipated would go into the park. So that really was, and in addition, the Vikings initially put up a contribution, a private contribution of $1 million, as I understand it, and again, I don't like being in a position of speaking for them. I believe their contribution is now up to $3 million. So they definitely have contributions to the park, and that was kind of all part of that original agreement. But the agreement covered a lot of different things and was very complicated, if you will. So,
okay.
Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And originally my question had to do with security, but a follow-on to Representative Applebaum's question. Are we able to know what the naming rights revenue was in terms of, I asked you those questions about how the team put together their contributions, and I forgot about the naming rights piece of it. So can you share, or will they share with the public what the naming rights revenue brought them? That was number one. With regard to security, you've mentioned a couple times these ways into the stadium, you know, from the parking ramp, as well as these huge, wonderful doors that can open to give a sense of bringing the outside in, which sounds great, but then does leave me with a question of, sounds like the security demands to be able to protect all those various ways to have access into the stadium seem pretty tough.
Chair Kim Hogan.
Yes, let me, your question is in two parts.
Right.
As far as the naming rights revenue, that would definitely be a question for the team. The naming rights revenue, as I understand it, is an ongoing source of revenue year by year to the team. So it's not money that they got up front that's going into, that's part of their contribution to the stadium. It's just an ongoing revenue source that they have. And it is definitely like all their revenues, it's, you know, they're a private company and we don't have access to that, so you'd have to ask them that. As far as the security issue of this, it, you know, we'll be taking tickets and manning those doors outside of the stadium when those big doors are open. And I don't think whether you open up 40 small doors or you open up 5 big doors, there will obviously be a lot of staff and ticket takers in between each of those sections. So it probably doesn't make that much of a difference. The Skyway, actually, you're right, will definitely add to our operating costs and kind of staffing and security. We're putting up, obviously, cameras and, you know, monitoring all that, because day-to-day that's going to be our issue to make sure it is secure and that we are doing what needs to be done. The one thing I will say is, from an operating standpoint, we have negotiated an agreement with SMG, which is going to be the third-party operator. They pay on an annual basis 100% of all the operating costs for the stadium, whether it's heat, light, staff, ticket takers, security, whatever it is. They pay 100% of those operating costs. So we definitely felt it was important that we protected the state, since we are the owner and operator of the building, and had someone else assume that liability, if you will.
Thanks.
All right. You can continue. Thank you.
So the other thing that's new since the last time I was here is we've got this pedestrian bridge that Met Transit, along with their paying for half of it, and now the Vikings are also paying for half of it, is building on our plaza. So if you see here with this train coming through, it'll come down on that downtown East Plaza block that we own where the train runs through. It's a 30-foot-wide bridge that lands on one side of the train, comes up over the train, and lands down on the other side of the stadium. It definitely is a safety issue that I think is really going to improve the safety in this area for a lot of reasons. There also are elevators on either side for access, handicapped accessibility. The economic impact, which I know the state is concerned about and was really the reason I believe the state decided to invest in the stadium. We have, obviously, as I mentioned, with Mortenson coming on board as our general contractor, it's been just amazing to see the impact on Minnesota businesses. We have over 1,300 workers on the site every day as of September. We have over 300 Minnesota companies that have and continue to work on this project. Over 90% of our construction budget has gone to Minnesota firms. And there are some just unbelievably great examples of companies, Daktronics, which is actually doing all the technology in our stadium, which in the end will be somewhere between $8 to $12 million. When they made their proposal, they knew how important Minnesota jobs was going to be. They were a South Dakota firm. So when they made their bid, as part of their bid, they said, we will manufacture everything for the stadium in Redwood Falls, Minnesota, in our plant there. We will expand our plant by 30,000 square feet, and we will permanently hire, and again, don't hold me to the number, but it was somewhere around 100 additional people. So they made this big expansion to take care of this. And you can find examples all over the state of businesses that brought on new workers and now all of a sudden are looking at expanding their business because of this project. Economic development in the surrounding areas. As I mentioned, the $400 million from Wells Fargo and Ryan. There's another $100 million in residential development. I just heard yesterday that there's $75 million more coming from two projects that are being announced and approved. One is a Radisson Hotel that's being built behind that Wells Fargo Tower on the same block. I think they are on the easterly block, closer to downtown, I think. And behind the other Wells Fargo Tower is Ryan Development is building a new corporate office building that they'll be moving into as well. So another, that's not listed on my sheet, but that's another $75 million. Then you've got $191 million from an HCMC expansion. They're building a new clinic and parking ramp already under construction. George Sherman is building another $100 million development. They've got an office tower, a hotel, and a residential tower, and that development is happening just right behind our parking ramp, so on 4th Avenue, 4th Street in Chicago.
Representative Davenant.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Kelm-Helgen, I certainly appreciate the construction in my city, and particularly the privately owned stuff that's going to go on the tax rolls even better. I am a little skeptical, however, about your use of the HCMC expansion as an example of the economic impact of the stadium, because unless that's research on long-term care and treatment for concussions, I'm not sure I understand the relationship with the stadium. Can you educate me on how that expansion of HCMC relates to the stadium?
Well, what they told us very clearly was that they were building this clinic because of all the residential development that was happening around the stadium. I mean, they linked it. It was their linking it, not us. It was not something that had planned to be built prior to this. So you're right. It's not on the tax rolls. And if we're going to look at private economic development, I think probably, you know, without it, we still are at $875 million, and that probably is a good distinction to make. So I do appreciate that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davenport. Yeah, it's all a mix. It was... I do appreciate the development around the stadium spurring then on a kind of a tertiary basis the HCMC clinic.
Right.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Any other questions? Chair Kim Helgen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the economic impact from committed events is the third way that the stadium is bringing in revenue. I think everybody's aware of the Super Bowl and the kind of economic impact that big event has. We also have a commitment in 2019 for the Final Four. The good thing about the Final Four, that obviously is a repeating event. As they've been here in town working with us, they're very clear that once we get in that cycle, we are definitely going to be getting, assuming we do a good job, which we obviously will, this will be an event that comes back on a every 4 to 5 year basis. In addition, we are a finalist for college football playoff. They're going to be making a decision. And again, that college football final is every bit as big as the Final Four, maybe even bigger eventually. We're a finalist for 2020. So by the time we hit 2020, I think it will have, you know, built into even a much bigger event. They'll be making a decision on that November 4th, I believe. It's either the 4th or the 6th, but the first week in November. And then as we look at all the other events, like right now, I point out to people, and when we get to this section, when I show you some of our construction photos, you know, this new stadium is 1.8 million square feet. The old Metrodome was 975,000 square feet. So this new building is almost twice as large. Where a lot of this space is in big open public spaces like some of our corridors, which actually now can be rented for events. But it also includes club spaces that, yes, the team will use on, you know, those 10 game days. But all those club spaces are revenue generators for the state the other 350 days a year. And we already, I should have brought the list. We're going to start talking about it more publicly as these contracts get finalized. We already have... probably for just the first couple months of stadium openings, we're already doing finalizing contracts with all sorts of corporations, nonprofit groups, a few weddings, all these outside events that are coming into all this club space and bringing revenue to the state. So it is having, and the concerts will bring, it's having a huge economic impact. It will have a huge economic impact. For all of this. And yet, of course, we will still do, per the legislation, all those public events that people have come to rely on. So we will do, similar to the Metrodome, we will do, you know, 6 weeks of baseball where we run baseball games in the early spring, late winter, early spring. So all our, not only the university, but private schools, two-year colleges, as well as many of our high schools, can play their early spring games indoors and not have to travel outside. We'll do that at very reduced rates. I always point out to people, and again, this was the legislation you put together, the team actually pays us $10 million, so $1 million a game in rent, as well as a $3 million capital investment payment every year. That $13 million that they pay us for their 10 game days covers almost 70% of the operating costs. So essentially, it enables us to subsidize all those high school colleges, whether it's marching band competitions, baseball games, high school football championships, high school girls and boys soccer championships. Obviously, all of that is subsidized by what is paid by that NFL team. We had some very aggressive equity goals that were set, again, as part of the legislation. We had a goal of 32% of the workforce would be minority. We currently are at 37%. 6% was supposed to be women. We're at 9%. And when I say we, this is Mortenson, and I have to give them a great deal of credit for what's been done. And as far as construction business goals, we currently have 16% of the businesses, the dollars going out to Minnesota companies, to all companies on the project, are women-owned businesses. 12% are minority-owned businesses. We on our own have included a veteran-owned business and workforce target, and we are definitely making some progress there.
And Chair Kim Helgen, when you say Mortenson, isn't it a joint venture between Mortenson and Thor Construction?
Yes, and I made that distinction when I first opened and as I started my presentation. It is Mortenson Thor, yes, absolutely. This just gives you a view of this sort of indoor-outdoor feel that you're going to have of this stadium. I always point out to people there's going to be no other stadium like this in the country, really in the world. And I think we are going to attract a lot of attention. I also point out, as owner and operator of the stadium, in Dallas, for example, they get 400,000 tourists come to tour their stadium every year. Jerry Jones, the owner, gets $20 a tour, so they make almost $8 million, rough numbers, on tours. Now, we are not Dallas, so we aren't quite as, you know, football crazy, and I'm not sure how it's going to shake out, but I guarantee you we are going to do a lot of tours, we're going to attract a lot of tourists, and all that revenue comes to the state, and it also brings people in who are going to be curious and excited to see what's happening in the stadium. This is a view. We've got really up-to-date technology, and again, the Vikings paid to upgrade a lot of this. We've got two large video boards, one on the west side, one on the east side. They are definitely going to change the whole experience within the stadium, both for those events as well as just thinking about what it'll be like for that high school baseball game that's being played there. We've got just great technology that's available throughout the stadium. These are some views of the stadium, looking actually toward the east side of the stadium, looking at that large video screen. And these are just some photographs of the various two levels of ribbon board for advertising and stats. And again, for our events, that advertising revenue will come to the state. And this shows you the incredible progress that is being made as the seats are all going in and most of the stadium concrete has already been poured. As I mentioned, we have these big, it's a very contemporary building, big, wide open concourses. It's, again, unlike the Metrodome. We will have two team stores that will be open, one on the upper level and one 365 days a year on the lower level that will bring people to the stadium. For our tours, we will have access to the team locker room, their training room, their hydrotherapy room, all those spaces, because that's, of course, what people are always excited to see. And this just quickly gives you a sense of some of the finishes and furnishes. As I mentioned, we have actually seven clubs within this building. Those club spaces are all ours, 350 days a year, to rent and use for all the different events. We have one club that is unique. There's no other stadium right now that has it. It's something called Club Purple. It's got this kind of large lounge banquette seating, couches, if you will, food and beverage in the back, and there's a deck off this club with a fire pit, and there'll be bars out there that will, again, makes this club very rentable for a lot of different events, not only in the summer and spring, but even in the winter, because there's fire pit and, you know, maybe ice bars and everything else. The one club that we will probably rent the most is the Viking Club. This club essentially has an entire wall of glass that opens on the stadium side. It also has a wall of glass that overlooks Minneapolis. We already have a lot of bookings for this club. It's going to be a great club for lots of different events. It's 30,000 square feet, and it definitely will be used by a lot of private and corporate functions, if you will. This shows you, again, the opening to the field. One of the things the Vikings paid for, we had glass along this entire wall. The Vikings actually paid to make it nano glass, which essentially means that the entire wall can be open, and you'll have this completely open view to the stadium bowl, which is obviously great for their events, but also really great for ours. And this shows you in that club space where you get the view to the downtown as well. This is the Valhalla Club that we will have available for our events. We've also rented this quite a bit. Again, this is the baseball setup. We've got 32 rows of retractable seats that will push back to make a great right field line. This will give us, I'm certain that we're going to do some baseball tournaments and other things in the stadium because of the amazing indoor baseball venue that this will be because of the way we design the stadium with this retractable seating. The other thing, sort of incidentally, that it does, it gives us one of the largest floor areas for conventions and any kind of floor shows that we'll be renting. Again, we're getting some rentals for that kind of thing as well. This shows you the configuration for the Final Four. We could do a Frozen Four or some kind of ice event. We will still do our dirt shows. People love that. Concerts. From a construction standpoint, we're 75% complete. We are definitely on schedule to be open next July, so like 9.5 months from now, the building will open. I always point out to people that it was only about 6 months ago that the Metrodome was still standing there, if you will. And this shows you just the progress that's being made. It's almost completely, the roof is almost completely finished now. This is the side of the roof with that ETFE, that transparent material that's going in. And this, again, just gives you a view of the east side of the stadium. Actually, I think somebody took this photograph standing on that large ridge truss that's there. And this shows you the original construction of that ridge truss before the roof was on. We've got an amazing interior loading dock turnaround space for big events and concerts. And this gives you a good view. Look at all the seats that are already in. There are portions of this building that are practically complete in some areas. When we put the initial seats in, we had the Minnesota High School League invite kids from 5 high schools to come to the stadium. And they were kids that play football, soccer, baseball, and are part of the marching band. And I can assure you that they are as excited about playing here as any Viking fan might be as well. It's going to be an incredible amenity. That ends my presentation, and I can answer any more questions that you might have.
Any more questions for Chair Kim Helgen? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Chair Kel Helgen. So I've heard some talk that there's a possibility that a season or two of MLS soccer might be possible to take place in the stadium, which leads me to my question. Does the Does the stadium field have a significant crown like a lot of pro football fields, or is it a relatively small crown on the actual field?
Chair Kim Helgen. He's an architect, by the way.
I'm not sure about that. I do know that when it was designed with the idea that it could host MLS. I know that we can put a floor over it for, you know, flat shows or conventions or things like that. So I'm not, it's pretty flexible, but I'm not sure about the crown.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Chair Kim Helgen? Thank you so very much. And I'd like to mention that I know that Lester Bagley wanted to be here but couldn't, and we'll make sure that he knows when the next meeting is going to be held, and therefore we all will have some idea of when we're going to come back together.
All right. And as you know, you can always reach me. If you have any questions come up along the way, I'm always available. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm not sure if anyone mentioned it at the beginning of the meeting, but Senator Rosen had a conflict and couldn't be here today. I think it's a funeral that she had to go to. And so I wanted to make sure that everyone was aware of the fact that she couldn't be here but wanted to be here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you. A couple of procedural questions. And I think we approved the minutes that I moved from January. But did we have another meeting? Do we have minutes from September that we needed to approve as well?
It's my understanding that we did not have a meeting in September.
Okay.
Is it September?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I'm wrong. Was I here? Yeah, I was here.
Those are the minutes from the time we met before that in 2014.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, I don't know if we want to have House or Senate or both counsel come down and tell us if we need to meet again this year, if we need to meet again to appoint chairs, just so we're complying with the legislation.
Well, just so that you're clear, someone can come down, but just so that you're clear, we are looking to have a meeting as soon as humanly possible so that we can elect chairs, because it is time for the chair person to be from the House and then the vice chair to be from the Senate. That is my understanding.
Mr. Chair, members,
testify.
Patrick McCormick from House Research. The statute that governs this commission is Minnesota Statute 3.8842. It requires meeting twice a year, and so this is the first meeting for 2015, so you would prospectively have a second meeting. Secondly, the statute requires alternation of chairs between the House and the Senate and every biennium, and so you're right, it would be timely to elect a House chair.
Thank you. So before we leave, Representative Hoppe, we will identify a meeting date.
Okay.
And Representative Hoppe.
But thank you, Mr. Chair. Whenever we want to meet between now and the end of the year, I think is fine with me. Probably the sooner the better, but Mr. McCormick, can I ask one quick question?
Absolutely.
So, Mr. McCormick, when we meet, are we electing a House chair and a Senate vice chair, or are we electing two Senate chairs? Did we lay that out in statute, or is it kind of up to us what we want to do?
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, members, it's up to you what you want to do. At the initial meeting of this group, the motion was made to elect two Senate co-chairs. That isn't something that the statute required. It just requires alternation between the House and Senate. So a motion could be made at the next one to elect two House co-chairs, or it could be to elect a House chair and a Senate vice chair. It's entirely up to you as long as it's a House chair so that we can meet the statutory rotation requirement.
Thank you.
And just to further clarify that, when Representative Hoppe, I believe you were here, and you know that that was something that we elected to do, and we wanted to make sure that we had House participation, which is why we also had a vice chair that came from the House. And so it is entirely up to this body to decide what we would like to do. So we would hope that in the meantime and in between time that you would give some thought to it, and then the necessary nominations can come forward, and then we all will vote. Any other questions? Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McCormick, Could I ask you for the next meeting if we could just get a copy of the statute? I know we could all look that up, but I think because of the newness of the membership, so many of us here, it would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? So what we will do is probably, would you like to select that meeting now or do it by email, or how would you like to proceed?
Email would be easier.
Email, and therefore we can do the doodle thing and get all that information out?
Yeah.
See, notice that of course, I have a millennial who helps me with understanding that latest stuff, right? Anything else? If nothing else, thank you again, and welcome to the new members, and sorry that I wasn't here right at the beginning. We stand adjourned.
Thank you.